feel like you wanna leave or anything, I have nothing to do today except what we are doing. This is my last work day thing. So feel free to whatever, how long you wanna talk. Feel free.
Okay.
Perfect. So let's start. Pat, I'm so happy that you're here with me. It's already the second time that you're on my show. And I think the first time I learned a very, very important thing that I still use up until today. You told me about the open door policy. And every time someone is criticizing me for not sending my kid to school, I'm like, we have the open door policy, but my son doesn't want to go to that through that door. This is why it's... But I love it because people then know, okay, she's open-minded, which I'm not, but she would be if there would be a school that would fit into a non-harmful school. I would be so open for this. That's a disclosure I'm not giving the people when I say that sentence, but I love that sentence and it's still very useful. I'm so happy that you're here with me, so thank you so much for being on my show the second time.
My pleasure, Alexandra. Nice to speak with you again.
Oh, very cool. Yes, tell me, you are like, I've been following your journey and everything, but I think the last couple of months, it really took off and I see a lot of new things happening around your project. Mm-hmm. And maybe you want to talk about it.
Sure. It's been really interesting to me how homeschooling has been growing and as an option. And also, all of a sudden, a lot of more researchers, a lot more pushback from the education establishment. But, you know, it's hard to see that in the United States at this moment because we're in this crazy election right now. And so no presidential candidates even talked about education here. It's too dangerous. There's already enough, you know, hot topics that they're touching. So I feel like, the shoe will drop after the election. When it comes to what's going on with homeschooling here. But we're lucky, it's pretty much the States. But in Europe and stuff, I've seen a lot of several people have reached out to me about, stricter regulations and, people worried about changes that might happen, that are being proposed, but nothing is firm yet. So we're in one of those fluid states because homeschooling is growing and, it's not just schools. I mean, there's a lot of different forces that don't want to see people enjoy their own communities, in their own ways. It's like, no, you can participate, but only if you attend this for this amount of time and that for that amount of time, do this and do that, and then we'll consider you a citizen. I was like, no, we're citizens by being born here and paying our taxes and supporting our various candidates. And it's really interesting to me how as homeschooling gains more cachet, even. I mean, many years ago, I'm going back to 20 years, but the former head of the Secretary of Education, his name was Lamar Alexander under the Bush administration, a very conservative regime, if you want. Administration, we call it here in America. That's right, administration. He decided that, he was going to travel for 6 months with his family and that he would take his kids and homeschool them while they did this. And it caused a little bit of a kerfluffle, I was always impressed that, he did it. So people, it's gotten into some really interesting areas of American life. And I think it's happening in Europe and the Europeans are starting to get nervous now, but unnecessarily so. I mean, there are countries that, like Denmark and Britain, that have been dealing with a homeschooling for a while and have come up with policies that work. But again, everything's in flux and we're in a time of change and people want to crack down on people who don't look like them or do things like them.
True. Yes, I can share a little story about that. Since 1 year, homeschooling, unschooling is not that easy anymore on the Canary Islands. It's not like they come up with the police at your house and grab your kid and bring it to school. It's not like that. But it is a lot of work to maintain homeschooling here. And before, nobody was even interested in what we were doing as a homeschooling community. And now the tone is really changing. It's not friendly anymore. It's not, we are interested in how you see alternative education. And there are a lot of alternative educational projects here. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they cope with it, but the individuals are really targeted at the moment. And there's no real solution, because all the solutions that worked before are now somehow not working anymore. There's no law that is telling you not to choose, for example, an online school, official online school, really normal school, just online, worked very well the last couple of years. Now, not anymore. So it has to be a physical school. Otherwise, you're out, at least for the Canary Islands. It's very interesting, because here it was so relaxed all the years.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Wow.
Yes, yes. So all the people here now are like, I know it's illegal to do so, but most of the people are like, okay, you can just stay there and change, your, what is even the right term for it? I'm sorry, my brain is full of Spanish. I just have the Spanish term for it. Registration. You don't need to register here. But the crazy thing is, if you're already registered here, then you're already in the like danger zone. So for everyone who thinks of moving to the Canary Islands because it's known as a good homeschooling place, think twice how you enter the country, because might have not so nice consequences. But it's not widely known that the situation here changed. So I'm really, we talked about it before we started that recording, that this is not the only place where the tone is changing towards the unschooling community or homeschooling community. And it's quite interesting, because I just have this micro overview about what is happening here in the few kilometers I call my home. But worldwide, I have no clue. And you just said there is someone in Ireland, and even they have issues.
I just heard from her last week, and we're scheduling a call for this week or next week. She said that it's become very difficult, that she lives in Dublin. It's become very difficult for people to unschool. Mm-hmm. That conventional school is not as criticized and it's more accepted, but unschooling, which has never been a problem. I've spoken in Ireland twice, and they have a solid homeschooling community, and unschooling is widely accepted. And again, it's still within the minority. I mean, most people do school at home. You know, they buy the curriculum and so on. But, home, even there, inroads are made, because there's only so many hours in the day. And how many books can you force your children to march through, at some point? It's like, yes, you can play, and then they say, oh, look how much they learned when they were doing such and such, playing this game or building that, but these things all take time, So I heard from Ireland. I know that the UN is currently, it's some group within the UN, but they're studying, it's connected to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and they're trying to figure out, what's going on with homeschooling in Europe in general. And, so they've called a special session of experts to figure this out, and that always, worries me.
Yes.
A bunch of education experts, telling people how to live their lives on a daily basis. It's like, wait a minute, but that's, this is the world we live in, where people think that you can learn just by being instructed over a computer. It's that, to them, it's like this classic dichotomy that Ivan Illich really exploited in his book, The Schooling Society. Schooling is not the same as education. But we conflate them, And so, professional educators think that the only way you can learn is to sit down and be lectured or instructed in some way. But it's always eyes ahead on the single person. And that's fine. That does work. We know this. Yes, throughout history, people have gathered in groups to learn and do things together. But that's not the only way. And then A man named, a philosopher, Jacques Ellul, wrote in the late 1950s a book called The Technological Society. And, you know, he was warning about, like, you know, how we're letting technology reorder our brains to think that this is the way we should be. And he cited schooling as a technology. And, you know, using World War II as an example, you know, how propaganda and so on. And then, of course, we have even more recent ones since the 50s, you know, people like in Cambodia and where, you know, and China, where they have in Russia, where they literally call them re-education camps.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's crazy.
You know? I mean, it's just essentially forced schooling. So, yeah, we know that you know, you can teach people this way. But do you want, but what's happened is it used to be like maybe a half day. I mean, in Shakespeare's time, you know, or and even earlier, there were just wandering teachers who would show up once a year for 4 to 6 weeks, maybe, you know, and the world went on. People invented things, you know, and commerce increased. But for some reason, John Gatto in his books, you know, cites the Prussians, you know, because they were able to school their army, and the Prussian army as a result of that, you know, became a model. And so we took basically this technology and started to apply it to younger and younger children. And now it's to the point where we've conflated education with schooling. The more years of schooling you have, the more smarter you are, the more accomplished you're considered to be. You know, in fact, right now, I just read an article today, one of many. I mean, this has been a topic for like maybe a decade now, where they're saying that America is no longer being segregated by, the election is not determined by figuring out race and class of people, you know, that the party seem to be divided there. It's more about educational attainment, as they call it.
Yes.
You know? Crazy. And so here we are, like, you know, everyone's saying, oh, we need education for democracy. But all we're seeing is that education is causing this huge split in democracy. You know, it's not bringing people together, it's separating them. And I think that's, again, a problem about just defining education as schooling, because schooling is essentially a competition to determine who's number one and who's the bottom, who needs remediation, who should go to advanced classes. And, you know, again, in a little bit of everybody's life, you want to learn to read, you don't necessarily need to go to a school to do that, you know. But if you want to learn to do certain things like computer programming, you don't have the money or wherewithal to have your own computer or people around you who can help you learn it, of course. You know, I mean, we were talking about the open door policy, you know, before we started talking. And, you know, that's one of those examples that I often give is, like, you know, despite the fact that America has a mandatory classes in foreign languages, we're like one of the most monolingual countries on earth. Even, I mean, I passed Spanish in high school and college, but I can't speak it. Right now, I'm learning it on my own and enjoying it a great deal and looking forward to going to Mexico in March. But, but you know, I have a reason. I know that there are people that I will get to know better if I do this. It's not to pass a test. It's not to please my parents and the teachers. It's because it's something it's a purpose that I have now. And I think that's one of the big issues is school doesn't give kids purpose other than to compete against each other. And we have to figure out, like, how do we make it more of a communal activity? For me, the way to do it is you make it voluntary. You know, so, like, you know, my kids have gone in and out of public and private and community colleges taking courses, you know. We knew. I mean, sometimes our daughter would only last 2 weeks in school. Another daughter lasted 6 months, you know. But they all decided at one point to come out, you know. And that was fine. And the school is comfortable with that. I mean, what could they do? I mean, it's there are children, you know. And you know, so it is possible, you know. And there's this model that's been around for a long time. But for some reason, we're just locked into this idea that you must go to school for the full time, and only then will you be proven to be a good, an intelligent person. And to me, it's like it is such a bunch of hogwash. You know, it was like, you know, when I look at educational attainment and the hollowing out of the American worker class, you know, 52%, I think the number is 52%. When I revised Teacher Own, I looked this up, and I'm pretty sure it was at this number. 52% of college graduates in America are underemployed, meaning they're doing work that could be done by somebody with a high school diploma. So when we talk about educational attainment and how important it is, no one, they're just talking about the end result of having a degree in your hand instead of, well, what do they do with this? What they do is they take retail jobs and barista jobs and bartending and waitering jobs away from the people who don't have the college degrees.
Yes, it is exactly that. It is exactly that point. And I always told my parents, because my parents, like, they really believed it. You graduate and then you will have a great job and blah, blah, blah. And I graduated and then I was like, dude, what am I going to do with all of what I've learned in the last 10 years in university? I've never worked in my job. And I started just translating from one mother tongue to my other mother tongue. Didn't really make sense at all, but it is what it is.
It is, yeah. And that's why, you know, here we are trying to do something about it. You know, I mean, we know that we can't control the levers of power. And, you know, and they have, you know, very prejudiced ideas. I was amazed. I attended a conference at Harvard back in September. Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government has been doing this Emerging School Models event. And I wrote about this on my blog. At the event, you know, they're talking about all these different school models that they have, right? And it's all about schools that like have themes like, oh, you know, we're going to save the environment. So the kids are going to show up every day in this particular location. They get bussed in. We do this and then we go walk through the woods. We fix this. We do that. And these are good ideas, you know, but they're so careful to say, and therefore checks off this box on the state requirement, checks off this box on this. And then they're all eligible to become graduates. You know, they'll get a state certified diploma, you know, and the only way that they get funding from the state or the local municipalities is if they match up that way. And so, yeah, they have innovative ways, just like schools in the 60s and 70s were trying to, you know, and we still have alternative schools, although very few of them in America, but they're there. It's just been chipped away by this idea that school is the only way we learn. And so the question, myself and others raised the question at this event, why can't funding be available to groups like the YMCA, which runs gymnasiums and children's programs, but they're all in the summer and after school and on weekends? Mm-hmm. Why can't they, you know, get funding for kids to attend during the school week? You know, and then, you know, groups like 4-H, which are based in rural areas and teach farming and animal husbandry and you know, conservation techniques. Why can't they be, but no. It must be a school. It must be founded by someone with a PhD and so on and so forth. You know, so I really appreciate the emerging school models, but I just wish it would go beyond school. That yes. They realize that, you know, that not everyone wants, you know, their kids to be full time. Now, some, not a lot of these programs, but some of them offer part time access, which I think is great for people, particularly unschoolers. You know, if you only want to take one course, like, you know, computer programming or Spanish, why not? You know, the school will get paid for it, you know, either through the state funds or from private funds, however you want to set it up. The kids are there, because that's a big worry, like with the UN thing I mentioned earlier. They're all worried about kids being abused, you know, because they're not seeing them. Their parents are keeping them sheltered. It's just like, how many of them really talk to homeschool? We're always, I mean, really, in unschooling in particular, but I know this is true for homeschoolers all around the world. They're looking for friends for their kids. They're looking for other families. They're always seeking. Yes, there's always a small minority of bad people, and they exist in private and public schools too. You know, they exist in churches. You know, they exist in religions. We know this. You know, so why single out, you know, the families for all this special, you know, scrutiny, and let these other people get a pass until they step over the line, and then it becomes a problem. You know, but, you know, and systemically, they, you know, let's not go there. That gets us far away from homeschooling. But yeah, you know, I mean, I think that we are, homeschoolers are definitely held to a double standard when it comes to this idea of the amount of instruction time. I know, like, the OECD has, you know, I mean, the French in particular seem obsessed with cataloging everything, what people need to know, like all these checklists of skills and concepts. And it's, you know, and it's just like, must we say this for the 900th time? It's like, yes, most people can graduate from college, but they can only do a few of the things they studied. Everything else, like, they passed the test and immediately forgot it. I know that was true for me in a lot of things. And I think if people are honest, that's true. And when we have a purpose, yeah, you don't forget those things. And then you want to go into the next level, you know, graduate school or professional work in that area or something. But until you find that purpose, right? And the only thing school seems to do for young people, especially elementary and high schools, is prepare them for more school.
Yeah.
So the purpose, yeah, so children get the idea that the whole purpose of school is to get to the next level of school. And we've seen this careerism and the suicide rates of children in school and depression of you know, when I spoke in Ireland not many years ago, I guess it was about 10 years ago, I quoted an article that talked about all these college grad people in college that were committing suicide because if they didn't get certain levels of grades, they felt that their careers were over, or that, you know, they just didn't have anything because, you know, their careers or, you know, what they were studying is no longer, you know. For instance, in English, I was an English major. I got my master's degree in English. They don't do English anymore in colleges. You can't study English literature in the vast majority of schools. They cut it because it's not a moneymaker. They say, oh, learning about literature and how to write well and how to interpret text. Oh, that's something you could do on your own. And the same thing happened with penmanship. And now, you know, I mean, people don't teach script writing, you know. Here, you know, and they said, oh, children will learn that on their own. And I wanted to slap them. I was like, you tell me kids can't learn math on their own, but now you're suddenly saying, oh, we're dropping teaching them, you know, how to do handwriting, mm-hmm. script for handwriting, because like they could pick that up on their own. You know, so the schools are very, very confused and conflicted on how these things actually work, but they act as if, you know, they're the Pope and they just, everyone must, I say this and we all must do this because it's proven. But, you know, I mean, gosh, at one point, you know, universities were teaching, I forget the name of it, but, you know, if you have bumps on your head, you know, they said that, oh gosh, I can't think of the word, but anyway, phrenology. Mm. And it was actually, you know, taught in universities. And, you know, I mean, you know, we know that that's BS now, you know. And I guess universities are figuring, oh yeah, being an English major is BS now, and everything has just become computers and finance. I mean, those are the big majors. That's where people are going, and those are very limited fields, you know. And meanwhile, people who want to do things with their hands or do things in their community, do things that with groups, they're finding it harder and harder to gain traction. Because that's just not, you know, I mean, people are like, oh, you do that, you're going to be living in poverty for the rest of your life. You know, you'll never move out of that neighborhood. You'll never get into that really ritzy, nice, you know, closeted community. And, you know, the fact is, some of us don't want to do that. You know, I'm happy to be in my place. I'm happy to participate in my local community and know my neighbors. And, you know, and have my children nearby. And, you know, they're all grown now. You know, one of them's on the West Coast. But, you know, I feel close, you know, still close to real people. It's not just, you know, the online community, which is a real thing, but it's also a thin thing.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's not able to deliver a meal. It's not able to hold my hand if I'm sick in bed. I'm not able to play it. You know, yeah, we can play certain games, but you know, we're not going to be able to play soccer unless it's just some weird online thing where you're moving a mouse. You know, but a real physical activity. You know, so and so getting, you know, and my friend Peter Gray, you know, Dr. Peter Gray, his book Free at Last is really valuable and important to read. We need to involve children in activities more and let them run their activities more. Too many adults take over the games. Too many adults run the sports. Too many adults just inject themselves. You know, let the kids figure it out, you know? And yeah, if there's bullying and stuff, sometimes there's a time when you have to step in, especially if a kid asks for someone to step in. Hey, help, this guy's, you know, this is getting out of control. Yeah, that's valid. But, you know, I think that a lot of alternative schools have had, you know, experience with this. And it's amazing that, you know, most of our conventional schools have not learned this. It's just like they still think, you know, you have to be the overseer, the manager, you know, of this group of children and you know, keep them on task. And, you know, but when the task is let them play and figure out what each other's personality is like and who they get along with and who they don't and how to make all that work. I mean, you just can't instruct that, you know, you have to let people experience it and, you know, yeah, you could be there as an advisor or someone who, you know, to talk to, but, you know, let the game play out, you know, just be the, you know, the referee if you must, but don't, mm-hmm. don't be the boss. And yeah. we seem, you know, adults, we just seem to have a real tough time with that, particularly educators.
So true. I this is what I already experienced a couple of times here on the island with different homeschooling, unschooling families. Normally, I'm the one who's, I just want my kid to be free because I really trust in his abilities because already now he's 11 and he's so much, he's way more smart than me. He's so smart. And I know in a couple of years, he will outgrow me and I will be the stupid one. And that is okay because they should outgrow us because this is my job to give him this kind of freedom to become smarter, better, stronger, just a better human being than me. This is evolution. This is how it works. And I mm-hmm. feel like there are so many parents, they are so afraid and they call it they will manipulate you. They will be in charge of the family and these kind of things. And I just don't feel it. And I never felt it. I was never afraid of this moment to happen that my kid will take over the household. Oh my God, what will he do? Washing the dishes or what is he going to do? So I was like, okay, let's see what's... because running a household is tough. So if he was going to take over with 12, let's see how it's working out. Not happening. But in short, the fear of letting go and trust in your kids' abilities to conquer the world is just not there yet by so, so, so many people. And I think we are living mm-hmm. in the future, maybe in 10, 15, 20 years, maybe unschooling, homeschooling will be way more accepted and people will be ready for it because we are now the foundation. I mean, there were so many people before us laying this foundation, building this foundation, and still I think it's not a building yet, it's still a foundation because so many people out there, it's a little bit like Bitcoin, we are still so early and people see it, they think it's weird and they are afraid. Even the ones who are in already are like, oh my God, I could never do it like completely because just imagine my kid will take over the house and be the boss. And I felt like we as humanity, we have a huge job to do still to come to that point to have trust in our own offspring. And I think mm-hmm. it's because we don't trust ourselves. And this is why, mm-hmm. because we went to school and when I try to tell people like, you know where mm-hmm. your trust issues are coming from? Maybe right. from school because you were never good enough to do anything.
Yeah, also from the way we were parented. Yeah. Our parents were raised in a generation that were fully integrated with the whole, you know, school mentality, you know, and yeah, I mean, particularly after World War II, it you know, it's interesting, you know, because again, school wasn't all inclusive until around the late 50s and early 60s when, you know, I mean, I can remember, you know, and I went to school in the inner city. I'm not inner city, the Bronx in New York. But anyway, in public school, if your house was within a certain distance or your apartment of the school, you could go home for lunch and then walk back to the school.
No way.
And that was very common. But now, forget it, you know. And part of that is because we did away with a lot of neighborhood schools. You know, in the 70s and 80s, we got into this whole busing thing where like, oh, let's create these big magnet schools and bus everyone into them, thinking that was a much more economical and efficient way of dealing with it. But now, I think this point also ties into a lot of other things we've been mentioning. The birth rate's been going down. The birth rate's been going down since the late 70s, you know, and early 80s. I mean, I remember John Holt wrote about it in the first edition of Teach Your Own, which came out in 1981. He's like, why are we building these huge, huge schools instead of like doing like they, you know, a model for him was Denmark, where they had neighborhood schools. And, you know, which my friends in Denmark say is no longer the case, that they're actually becoming more Americanized in their approach to education, unfortunately, focusing more on test scores than on the community building. But, you know, what's interesting about that, and my friend Aaron Falbell wrote his dissertation at MIT on the free school. It's called Free School in 70, I think it was called. And he spent a year learning Danish through immersion and studying, you know, how the school worked. And the bottom line that I want to get to on this is that the school was allowed, it took 1 year where the parents decided they wanted a school in their neighborhood like this, right? And then they would find, I think, two or three teachers, I forgot the exact number, but it wasn't many, who would help them start it. And if the school reached a certain level of enrollment, which was not, and it didn't have to be in the hundreds because they were thinking neighborhoods, then the Danish government would fund that school for X number of years. And the whole point was that there were neighborhood schools, so they weren't in buildings, they would just rent, you know, spaces, and the school would disappear once the children had grown up and moved out and they didn't have that base support anymore. So it wasn't like, oh my gosh, now we got this huge infrastructure building, it's going to remain empty until someone figures out how to convert it into, you know, housing or offices or something. Instead, it was just like, it goes away and something else moves in there, you know, older people or teenagers or whatever, you know. But it was a more growth-oriented. It was more based on, like, the idea that people will age out of this and things will change. Instead, we have, you know, our schools are like monuments, you know, that never change. And, you know, and the fact is, you know, the world has changed so much. I mean, social media, cell phones alone. You know, I can remember, you know, when my kids were in school, you know, cell phone hadn't started. And then when it did, I remember my kids were school age because they weren't always in school. But they were, you know, parents were saying, I mean, I remember a criticism was always that the schools didn't even have telephones in them. You know, like you had to go to the principal's office to call your parents if you were sick.
Yes.
And everyone's uncomfortable with that, right? And all of a sudden the cell phone comes around and it's the parents that are keeping the phones in the kids' hands because they feel that their kids might need them for something. And so they, you know, and I was really surprised when I read the data on that it's actually parents pushing the schools to keep cell phones there. So now you have these things where kids come in and they have to put their cell phone in a pouch and, you know, then they go there and then on lunchtime they can go and check the messages from their parents. And, you know, I mean, it's just like, wait a minute, it didn't have to be that way. And part of me wonders, is that guilt on the parents' part? You know, knowing that, you know, I'm so far away from my kids, but at least I'll show them that I love them this way.
Yeah.
You know, because really, you know, school has increased its hours, its requirements, and, you know, and meanwhile, you know, people have learned to use computers, you know, largely without schools. You know, I mean, the reason schools have computers, a lot of them, is because they were donated by Apple and Google, you know, and of course they were sold to them. So the companies are making some money, but they know very well that they're creating future consumers of their products, you know, creating the loyalty to this. Yeah, it's not because they're, you know, trying to help or that these are even necessary. Children and adults, we learned how to use ATMs, cell phones, and computers as adults without going to school. Why do we think that kids need 8 years of lessons to learn how to use these things? You know, I could go on and on about this. But you know, the last thing I'll say on the topic, unless you want to continue, one of the things that happens in education is what happens in work. And John Holt, you know, was very fond of this book called Parkinson's Law. It was written by an economist in the, I believe, the 1950s, and it's still in print. And it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek book about work. But Parkinson's Law is this: work expands to fill the time allotted. So if you have a four-hour school day, you're not going to say, oh, you know, I'm going to let you kids play for an hour. It's, they have this free hour where they could play. Well, they should be learning a foreign language. Oh, that next thing you know, we went from, you know, a half a day to a full day, then a full day with homework, full day with evening classes. Yeah, work expands and we all have all this stuff. And, you know, algebra and calculus and foreign languages and Latin and whatever else the school feels is necessary to make you a, quote, well-rounded individual. Like, we all know what they look like, you know. I don't think so, but the schools seem that if we do this process, we will become this well-rounded individual. And as we said earlier, we forget most of it the minute we're out of school. It's like, what a waste of everybody's time. Let them learn what they want to learn. Help them move into the directions they want to go. And if they change their mind because they find the fit isn't right or they don't like the topic anymore, whatever, their family situation changes, they get ill, it's okay. Drop it and try something else or come back to it in a year or something. You know, school has just become like this racetrack that you can't stop running on. And if you do, you're considered damaged goods.
Yes, that's crazy, isn't it? How society sees you if you fail school. It's really crazy. Mm-hmm. And what I feel like, I think you're completely correct with this guilt that parents have when they send their kids to school, because inside of us, I think whoever is out there, maybe already dead, not feeling it, but I swear, my kid tried school and he went to, he visited like, I don't know, free school for quite some time. And even in the free school, I had the feeling like this kid should be with me. And I had this guilt trip. Although I knew mm-hmm. that he was in a safe place, he enjoyed his time, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my God, I'm missing mm-hmm. him so much. I'm missing right. time with him. I'm missing out on so many things. I want to see him. I want to see his experiences and how happy he is. And even if he's not happy, I want to see how he's going through life. And I think as we are not able to do this anymore, if we send our kids to like this, it's not... I remember I had like 4 hours of school every day, and now it's crazy. Already the smaller kids here have like 6 to 8 hours of school. Mm-hmm. I could never imagine. You don't even know your kid anymore after you send mm-hmm. it to school for a couple of years. Who is that person? And mm-hmm. what I think is that the influence of the family is so immensely important. I see it with my family. My grandma and my grandpa had the greatest influence on me. Not even my parents, it were my grandparents. And still, until today, I feel like I'm their child, not my parents' child, because I spent so much time with them. And just imagine, you have this bonding to your school because you have more time there, you have more connections in school than with your own family. And I think the whole scenery, and maybe this fits to what we talked about at the beginning, that the whole situation for unschooling, homeschooling people is getting more and more critical, and the pressure is increasing. Yeah, because they want you to give away your kid. They want families to be broken because it's easier for them to fulfill whatever crazy fantasy they have with broken people. Just imagine you have strong kids, and this is what I see with my kid. I've never knew an unschooled kid or homeschooled kid when I was a kid. I didn't even know how they would behave in everyday life. And now I know, and I'm impressed, because you cannot take away their rights. They can discuss it, like every topic, no matter what you present to them, they discuss it until you're dead. It is what it is. So what I really see is that, yeah, first of all, this is a plan that is being fulfilled on the one side, and the other side is that so many parents just lost the feeling of what it means to be a parent. And society tells us to not have kids, and how much stress it is to be a parent. It is not, in fact, if you do it in a peaceful, supportive surrounding, and people don't know it because nobody's doing it anymore. And the people who are doing it are now under a lot of pressure. And maybe if more and more people would speak out about it and be a role model for or show, this is how family could look like, fix the problem. Because just imagine, nobody would go back to school. I would doubt it.
You know, I just had last week a very bitter and illuminating experience online on Facebook. I posted a video called Traditional School versus Homeschooling that was created by an engineer in Australia, and I thought it was very good, and I put it up on the page Holt GWS, Holt Growing Without Schooling, on Facebook, and it got nice engagement. And so for the first time, I said, okay, I'm going to boost this. I've never boosted one of my things before. I paid the money to boost it on Facebook, and it said it hit like 4,000 people. Well, let me tell you, Alexandra, I got hounded. People calling homeschooling, first of all, calling me a fascist for supporting homeschooling. Saying that if homeschooling is for religious fanatics, and I'm a religious fanatic supporting homeschooling. What? Homeschooling is for losers. They were they used bots because they were able to post a GIF that said fraud alert on every one of my posts on the whole GWS site. And I was upset, and I started to respond to them and explain things. And finally, I was just like, I learned, because I've been on Facebook about 12 years or more. And I've had people disagree with me, and we could go back and forth in the comments, and that was that. Nothing like this, you know? And so I realized, like, this was like the late 70s, early 80s when I first got started with homeschooling, and people immediately assumed that if you were homeschooling, you were just some, you know, militia member living in Montana trying, you know. And that was the other thing they said, that only idiot parents are going to raise idiot children because they homeschool them, you know. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't believe the slime and the absolute insults. And I'm pretty sure that a lot of these people were, you know, clearly they were in support of public schools, which is fine. I've never said stop public or private schools. I'm saying this is the third way, and that we could cooperate. You know, I mean, we've always talked about, you know, a fruitful partnership between schools and homeschoolers. It doesn't have to be, you know, this do or die situation. But then I realized, yeah, here we are. I mean, no, I thought we'd made inroads, and yeah, homeschooling's increased. And that, by the way, is one of the reasons why Harvard was doing this year's emerging school models focused on homeschooling, because homeschooling has increased the most of any alternative school method. And while public and private school enrollments are going down, you know, there's a chart, you know, that's reproduced in the materials. If you go to my blog on this, I link to the whole conference. You can see all the videos of this. Homeschooling has increased 6% over the last 2 years, and that for schools when all the other school models are declining. Yeah. All of there's this thing, and it's just like, I think people are getting nervous now in the establishment. It's like, oh, wow, You know, and it's like, well, they've always been nervous about this. And, you know, and clearly we have a lot to overcome, you know, if, you know, people are still assuming that, you know, everybody, I mean, I kept saying, not everyone homeschools for religious reasons at all, you know, but it didn't matter. You know, I was still a religious fanatic. And then, you know, part of me also wondered if, you know, because the creator of the video, Fayzid, Rahman, I think is his last name. And I'm going to do a podcast with him in a week or so. He did a great job, but he's a devout Muslim. And that's clear when you go to his YouTube page, you know, but he has a whole section on homeschooling there. That's just brilliant, you know? Yes. And it's just like, am I a religious fanatic because I'm promoting his video? I couldn't quite understand where all this is coming from, you know? It seems so irrational. But it was there, and it was virulent.
Mm-hmm. But my son had the same experience. I think he posted something online, and there about how not going to school made him way more smarter than going to school, because he had both experiences in his life. And there was someone always commenting, yeah, you need school to learn how to read. You need it to learn how to do basic math and these kind of things. And it went on and on and on. And there was nothing that could not be learned at home. And in the end, my kid just said, this person is so dumb, I think he went to school. There is no other reason to act like this and to defend school like it's your one and only. Why? It's impossible. He could not even argument. There wasn't any kind of substantial information in this argumentation. It was just insane. And so I was like, yeah, maybe it's not the right time for us to promote unschooling. People are just not ready for it yet, maybe. And the minority who's ready for it? Yeah.
Well, you know, just the general idea that parents... Yeah, that it was clear that all the criticism was founded on this idea that any parent is incapable of teaching their child at home.
Yeah.
You know, and they were talking about child abuse and being forced into child labor if you're a homeschooler. And, you know, and I pointed out that, look, schools have their problems with abuse and child labor, by the way, you know,
true.
Although very minor with the child labor thing, I think. But anyway, is the response that one gentleman sent, you know, to the over the airwaves was, we had to 4 years of education where our character is formed and, you know, we're tested on this. And I'm like, you know, private and public schools have had more than their share of problems with teachers doing inappropriate things with students.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Just because you spent 4 years in school doesn't automatically give you a good character. Yeah. You know.
And the but worst people have college degrees. It's crazy.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it doesn't. It's not like this. Yeah, the shield is like, hey, you know, how many priests took vows?
Yes. my God.
Look at the scandals they've caused. You know, so really, I mean, we have to get over this idea that just because you've been processed by a particular system means that you're like a machine and that works. Everything that happened to you is gonna be true forever. You know, it's I mean, that's a real problem with education. The idea that that once we graduate college, and unless we go proceed through graduate school, that's it, right? Then you're ready for work. And it's just like, why? I mean, I still want to learn things. I still take classes and stuff, but not all these formal things. Although on occasion I have. I mean, you know, I like to study magic, for instance, and piano. I attend lectures on those topics, absolutely. You know, but... sometimes there are young people there, you know, even young kids at these lectures too. It's just like, I'm comfortable with that. But this whole idea that every 10-year-old needs to know this by the end of that, I mean, that's completely artificial. You know, that is not based on human growth. We know that everyone grows at different rates and that people's environment, you know, affects how they grow. And their parents and their neighborhoods, right? And then if you live in, you know, God forbid, one of these neighborhoods that's had polluted water, like Flint, Michigan, mm-hmm. you know, or stuff. I mean, there's a lot of factors outside your hand, you know, that affect how well you can learn things. And to just think that, like, everyone is equal just because they're the same age, and, you know, it's a crazy idea, you know, but we're wedded to it, you know. And people fail to see that we could still have schools, and even the schools today, just, you know, but just by being a little more liberal about letting people in and out of them, you know, because many parents will want their kids full time in school because both parents have to work and blah, blah, blah. That's the way it is. But I'm also aware of parents who decide to, you know, they want to get out of the rat race for a while. You know, they want to spend some time, just like that secretary of education who I told you about, Lamar Alexander. He needed a break, so he took his family 6-month tour around the world. You know, so it is a shame that you know, we've created this perpetual machine of processing people, you know, namely, you know, compulsory schools, and it's so hard to change, you know, or make it adapt, that the only solution is to step outside of it and do it ourselves, you know, and literally have to separate ourselves from it. Although, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. And as we talked about, you know, it's the open door and having our kids learn. And of course, schooling isn't the only way. Like I was saying, like, there's sports, there's nature, there's so many different ways that children can engage with what we call academic subjects. You know, a kid who's interested in baseball and nothing but baseball in America will eventually want to learn to read and understand statistics. I guarantee it. I mean, you're not going to be a good ball player unless you know the history of the game a bit and how and what an earned run average is and so on.
And I think even that's true. Even if not, let him prove that he doesn't need it to succeed. Let him
exactly.
prove it. Why? Yeah, what is the issue with that? Right. I always feel like people are like, they feel like it's about them. It's like criticizing them. It's like Stockholm syndrome. You know, they have like this disgusting relationship with the school system that they have to defend it. Otherwise, what? What is going to happen to them? I mean, it's personality, I guess.
Many years ago, and this is still for sale. It's called Reporting Unschooling to School Officials, and you know, there are some states in America that, you know, unschooling, you know, I mean, it's allowed because you're allowed to teach, you know, choose whatever curriculum you want. But, you know, we were always advising parents, if your child is doing cooking with you, you know, you can say that that's a math lesson because they're learning fractions using a measuring cup.
True.
And, you know, and so, you know, you always try to take the real life experience and translate it into. And, you know, and so the book has many examples of that. But also, I realized that, you know, as I wrote the book, I think it's a pamphlet. In 2013, I took a bunch of stories from Growing Without Schooling, actual stories, and then a couple of original things that I wrote for it. But, you know, what's happened is parents have gotten more and more bold about just saying, yeah, I let my child play all day and include that as part of the report. And or like they did nothing but build with Legos for a week, you know. And here's a photo of their structures, and they tell me that this is a skyscraper and this is a moonwalker, this is an alien, right? So I put that, you know, I put these examples in there, and oh man, the school people that have read this book or this pamphlet, they are furious. They cannot believe that these are acceptable evaluations of children's learning. Like, everything must come down to a test score. It must match what's going on in school. And it's like, can't you open your heads a little bit to this, that not everyone grows and learns at the same rate? But no, it's just this factory.
And we need to mention your book. We didn't mention it yet, so.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. No. And I've started to read it and I really like it. And you know why? And maybe this is good advertising, because I've been, first of all, I've been looking on reflect on how you have these sections. And with everything I read, it's like, yes, I do this. I'm good. Okay, next thing. Oh, I'm doing this perfectly. Okay, this. Maybe I need to have an eye on this for the next couple of weeks, because I feel like there's a little bit of tension when I'm reading this. So for me, the book was I'm not ready yet. I'm not done yet with it fully. But for me, I have like a list of ideas I need to deepen in my everyday life. And I think this is a good book to go back and forth for, not only one time, but several times, because it's like an onion layer. If you de-school yourself and then you have something like this book with these 8 very pragmatic like phrases, and you can go back to it like, last time I felt like that, and this time I developed a little bit more into this direction, and so on and so on. I feel like it's a guiding force, especially, I don't know, if you're uncertain in the way you are unschooling. I mean, I'm not, but definitely helped me. I'm not even finished with it. I really like it. So maybe we should talk about your book a little bit.
I'm very, very happy to hear that. You know, it's kind of hard to try and distill. John's writing, and you know, I mean, those are quotes from all 10 of his books, you know, and Growing Without Schooling to boot. And so, you know, I was trying to give a taste of not just, you know, what unschooling is like, but of his ideas about what education is and how children are treated in our society because of education, you know. I'm very happy that it's out there, and I'm also very happy that my friends, the Conrads, Jesper Conrad, was very, very instrumental in helping me get that, you know, done. It was actually his idea to do it. I mean, I wrote it, but you know, if he hadn't nudged me, I never would have done it. You know, a lot of people just think, you know, oh, let children learn on their own. That's all John's talking about. And, you know, and that's obviously not the case at all. And I think it's very important that, you know, people realize that, you know, John's talking about that children learn through society. It's not how you teach a child that determines what sort of adult they become. It's how you treat the child. And I think there are schools that treat children well and schools that are indifferent and schools that treat them poorly. You know, just like I could say the same thing about families. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, but then, you know, where does the responsibility ultimately lie? And it's with the parents, you know, I'm amazed, you know, in America, you know, we talk a good game about supporting families, but we do a terrible game about actually doing it. You know, I mean, the stress, I mean, people think that education is just about putting information in kids' heads and having them, you know, use it properly, by which we determine that from a test, you know. But study after study has shown that if a child comes from a secure home, they have better school grades. They have more openness to the world. If a child comes from, you know, has good health and their eyes are checked and so on, that they, you know, they have better learning outcomes, right? But we don't, you know, often consider that. And again, I'm only speaking for America here, because I know in Europe it is different there, you know, because, you know, you take care of not every country, but many countries really consider social welfare to be an important part of what the government is supposed to do. Whereas in America, it's just like, oh, no, you know, we have a military and we have the economy. You guys have to take care of yourselves, you know, and so there we are. But, you know, there was an interesting study that came out this year about the U.S. Army. And it turns out that the U.S. Army has some of the best public schools, if you will, you know, schools run by the government, in terms of grades and achievement and satisfaction among families and the kids. And what the analysis showed is this is because they have guaranteed housing and guaranteed income, and their mm-hmm. and their health is looked after. That seemed to be the common denominator, because it didn't matter what nationality, what income level the kids were when they came in. Once they were in the army thing, the army world, that matters. But we don't. I don't know what it is in the United States. We refuse to think that, you know, a person's family life, how much, you know, health care they can afford. I mean, you know, some families. I mean, really, it's just awful the way the healthcare system works here. But, you know, if we could just stabilize that. So, you know, instead of like investing in the next great artificial intelligence computer program that's going to teach children calculus or algebra, what about putting that money towards, you know, improving the healthcare of families, you know, making it less expensive for them? But we don't see that as an educational intervention. But it is. And this is why mm-hmm. my families, homeschoolers, unschoolers, we understand that. Yeah, you know, if your child has a good meal in their belly, they're going to be more interested and more able to help do things, you know, or do things for themselves, or just sit down and take a class or participate in an activity. You know, it's just common sense. But, you know, for some reason, we feel like school is a race that should be run alone. And mm-hmm. judge alone. You know, you're number one in the class. Here's your trophy. You know, right? So we need to figure out other ways of doing it. And homeschoolers and unschoolers in particular, who are trying to leverage local resources, leverage, you know, public activities, parks, theater programs, whatever is available. And that's why, again, to go back to the very beginning of what I was saying about you know, school funding. It's like, why don't we, you know, I mean, I think, again, in Europe, you know, there are more countries that do this than not, where they fund public events. they fund things that, you know, festivals and so on. Here, it's very localized when that happens. And it gets less and less because they're expensive to put on. And the government doesn't want to do it because, you know, that's just considered, you know, tangential. It's really not important. If it's important, these people in their neighborhoods will take care of it themselves, you know. But, you know, so the idea is, yeah, you know, let's create more instructional materials. Let's create more schooling, because schooling can be regulated and monetized, and you know, and it is, of course, a way to control and maintain control over a population. You know, versus what about, you know, thinking about education in its broadest sense, you know, not, I mean, our school, Ivan Illich, and maybe this would be a good way to end. Ivan Illich taught me this. There is, you know, a mistake in our concept of the word education. And the mistake is its etymology. Most educators will say, oh, that word comes from the Latin word, educare, educe, it comes from the word educe, to lead out, you know, to lead, to draw forth, right? And so that's you know what it, we need people to pull, you know, to give this information in and pull it out of the kids. This is it. And Illich pointed out that no, that's, you know, and if you look up in America, in English, the Oxford English Dictionary gives the etymologies of words. So you can look this up in the OED. The word, the root word the OED says education comes from is educare, which means to nourish. And Illich was quick to point out that, you know, in the early days, people interpreted that as nourishing is breastfeeding. And he said that, you know, that's why if you when you go around Europe, sometimes you'll see in these old monasteries statues of male monks, but they have breasts, and it's the milk of human knowledge that they're mm-hmm. sharing, you know. And so it's this idea that education is actually connected to human touch and to human connection, as opposed to the leader in the front of a classroom drawing out all this information from these idiot children who would remain idiots unless they came to my class.
True.
So yeah, true. If we could go back to the root, to the actual root of the word education, we might actually begin to start, because that's what healthcare, that's what welfare, that's how all these things connect with learning, you know. But we've siloed education off into this thing that, you know, we're going to train artificial intelligence to do now. But artificial intelligence isn't going to breastfeed anybody.
No. From here, it's only going downwards, because I really think human interaction is what makes us learn.
Yes.
Human interaction. Yeah.
Yeah. That's absolutely right, Alexandra.
Let's see. So I'm super happy that you've been on my show. As always, I've learned tons as a proof for it. I've been writing down notes like a crazy person.
I'm gonna grade that now.
Yes, please. I want you to grade that. And maybe I failed.
I want your parents to try it afterwards. They know that they saw this.
I will blame it on my school education if this is not going through. I will blame it on my school education, because really, I went to school a lot. So if I failed this,
Part of life. Well, take care and keep up the good work. Yes.
Same. Thank you so much. Adios.
Love what you hear? Then please support the Wildlife Unschooling podcast by checking the donation link in the podcast description. And leave me a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and connect with me on social media for updates. And please feel free to drop me a text. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being part of this incredible journey.
Yeah, but adios, muchachos. Nee, ich koche jetzt gleich. Ich höre gleich auf zu arbeiten, dann koche ich. Bitte. Nein. Bitte. Nein. Bitte.